Welcome back to Ball Don't Lie on a Blue Monday. This has that classic blues like riff, and I'm sure there's a term for it and a name for it. I'm just not musically gifted enough, but you know it when you hear it.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah,
it's a blues of just you can talk over it.
Yeah. No, it's like a classic kind of a blues beat there, but it's fantastic. My man Patrick, you're doing a great job DJing a Blue Monday edition of Ball Don't Lie. Keep with your contributions on the Specs text line. We guys always make the show a lot better when you participate. 512-337-3776. In Rod's rant of the day, I won't be doing the ranting. I'll let Jimbo Fisher do the ranting. Yes, we have more Jimbo Fisher sound. Jimbo Fisher got into it with a San Antonio reporter. And Patrick has heard the sound because Patrick is the one that got the sound for us. And it's pretty lengthy. But, Patrick, you'll admit there's no way to break it up because he gets into it with the reporter, kind of a back and forth. And do you hear in the sound? And we're going to play it for you in Rod's round of the day. His media relations person try to de-escalate it.
Oh, yeah.
And he keeps telling them, like, I got this. Leave me alone.
It's you. Let's put it this way. You really need to hear it.
You got to hear it.
Because whether you hate him, it will make you hate him more. And if you like him, I want to hear what your opinion is on him.
Yeah,
I just want to hear it because you may think he's right.
You may think, no, a lot of Aggies don't think he's right. He actually brings up numbers. Like he went and did some research on name, image, and likeness deals with his recruiting class. You got to hear it. It's about 2.5, maybe 3 minutes long. But you know how he doesn't, there's no commas. In the way periods in the way that Jimbo Fisher speaks. I know that because I'm like that too.
He sounds more like Boomhauer from King of the Hill. That's how fast he starts going.
That's good. That's a great comparison.
There's a point in there where he sounds like a kid who got caught. I'm not saying he's caught. I'm saying he sounds like that because he gets so worked up over something.
I enjoyed and defended the response to Nick Saban. And you guys have heard me defend it, and I talked about that. I will admit this representation, this presentation doesn't do it for me. This one actually makes him look bad, in my opinion. The other one I thought looked him look good. People say they won. I thought the Jimbo Fisher retort to Nick Saban made him look good. I thought he won that battle in the court of public opinion.
Yeah, I mean, he got a public apology the next day.
Exactly. I say you won that one. This one, he looks sketchy. He looks like he's trying to defend himself. And it seems like I said, it's hard to defend yourself against a lie. So if Nick Saban is indeed lying at this point, it's just time to give it up. And Nick Saban himself has said they didn't break the law and he apologized for what he said too. But I will admit the continued defense of Jimbo Fisher and his recruiting class, it does seem right now it's like a little bit of overkill.
Yeah, it seems like he won one, and he's trying to go.
He's trying to go again.
I'm taking them all down, and you're like, whoa.
Yeah, it's like he already apologized, so you're good. Everybody said you look good in this whole thing, Jimbo.
This is, I'll tell you this before, and we'll get back on track. But he attacks a lot of other people. He goes after the media and everybody else.
He's after the reporter.
Yeah, and I mean all of media.
Yeah, he does.
He says
anybody and everybody.
He's like, he goes after us. He goes after. Yeah,
yeah, and he goes after the actual reporter he's going up against.
It's a fun interview.
Greg Simmons is his name from KSAT from down there in San Antonio because he was doing a speaking event for the donors and the boosters down in San Antonio. And I don't know how this guy got him so amped up. I have no idea because he should be feeling good right now because, like I said, he just won against Nick Saban again. He just beat Nick Saban again in the offseason. He beat him with the recruiting class, and he beat him during the season. He should be in a good mood, and he's not. He's defensive. He is defensive, and it's weird. And like I said, for a guy to defend it, Jimbo, I'll admit, this ain't a good look. You're going to hear it, and it ain't a good look for Jimbo. So we'll play that. Also, oh, you know what? Got some more sound. I found this. I had a friend of mine send me this in H-Town. Name, image, and likeness? You thought it was crazy? You think it's crazy right now? It's about to get crazier.
Come on, bring it to me.
It's about to get effing nuts.
Uh-oh.
Yeah. It's a different layer coming. I don't know why this layer is coming.
Uh-oh.
But it's about, oh, yeah, it's about to hit another level, Harch. And we'll,
rev it up, dog.
Yeah, we'll play sound and audio from that report in Rod's Rant of the Day, too. So I guess we'll just talk names and likeness and talk about Jimbo Fisher and hear from Jimbo Fisher as well. Okay, we'll do that coming up next segment. Let's talk about the Mavs, gentlemen, losing game three, and then we'll preview tonight's game between the Heat and the Celtics a little bit. Austin FC fans, don't worry. We're going to talk some Austin FC coming up in at 6 o'clock. Also going to talk some Cowboys coming up in at 6 o'clock. So don't worry about that. All right. Also, Rangers, Astros coming up next. I should have said Astros first, but go Astros. That's coming up next in the 5 o'clock after Raj Rant of the Day. We'll get into that. But right now, let's get into the Mavs game and their disappointing loss in Game 3. Now down 3-0 to the Warriors. Luka has been unbelievable. I mean, Luka is as good as advertised, if not better. I mean, he has been phenomenal. But I love this stat. I don't love it for Mavs fan, but this is a really interesting stat. That now Luka has 8 40-plus point playoff games. He's 2-6. He's lost four straight playoff games where he scored 40-plus points. That is tied for the longest such streak by a player scoring 40-plus points in NBA playoff history. So, yeah, Luka's going to get his. It's hard to stop Luka. He's unbelievable. But it is a team sport, and the Warriors are just a much better, not only a deeper team, they're a better team. They're a better team and a deeper team. Luka may be the best player overall remaining in his playoffs, but with the way Steph Curry is playing right now, there isn't a huge gap in between the two. There is a gap. I still think Luka's the man, but there isn't a huge gap where Luka now can be so transcendent where he can carry the team on his own. We haven't seen a team built like these Mavs make a run in terms of winning a championship. We haven't seen that in the modern age of the NBA, and I don't think we're going to see that because the Mavs are, in my opinion, done for. They could make an historic comeback, but being down 3-0, that's a Herculean task to try to come back from, Arch.
Yeah, it's going to be a tough road to hoe for them, but we'll wait and see what happens. But when you win on the road, and that's the biggest part, for what I've seen with the Warriors, being able to go and get the dub on the road is a huge step. But you start looking at what Luka was able to do, and just the team as a whole. You look at the Mavericks. As a team, they only had 18 assists. They also had 7 turnovers. Then you go and look at what Steph Curry had by himself. He had 11 assists. In 3 turnovers. So you start looking at how the game is being balanced. He shot 50% from the floor and 50% from 3. Yep. That's Steph Curry I'm talking about. Mm-hmm. And then you look at what Luka did. But the problem that Luka had yesterday, they lost by 9 points. Reggie Bullock did not do anything. He played 40 minutes and did not score a point.
Yeah.
0 for 10 from the field and 0 for 7 from 3, and 0 for 1 from the free throw line. So he didn't do anything to help the Mavs win the ball game. Luka got his 40, Jalen Brunson got 20, and Spencer Dinwiddie, coming off the bench, his thing. 26. He showed up. All they needed was a little bit from Reggie Bullock, and he didn't give them anything. So that is the biggest problem that I'm looking at for them. Hey, anything can happen. They might be able to get one game. They might be able to get one game, but I don't ever see them coming back and winning 4 in a row. I just don't see that happen.
In the first half, players not named Luka went 10 for 29 for Dallas and 5 of 22 from three-point range. It's amazing. I mean, they shoot a lot of three-pointers, right? But at this point in the playoffs, they're shooting 47, over 47% of all their shots are three-pointers.
Yeah, that's they're close live and to, die by, right?
Yeah, they're close to 50% of all their shots being three-pointers. They do live or die by it, and right now, yeah, they're dying a slow death by it. and in the first round, they were good at they were good because they shot 37% from three-point range, so they were right where they needed to be. They pulled the upset in round two over the Suns because they shot 40% from three-point range, so that was a huge advantage for them. And in the Western Conference Finals this round, they're shooting around 32% from three-point range. And the listen, the Suns, sorry, Suns, the Golden State Warriors weren't
the Suns
great.
Suns wish they were there.
Yeah, Suns wish they were there. The Golden State Warriors weren't great from 3-point range in this game. I mean, the Warriors shot, you know, I think 29% from 3-point range in the first three quarters. So they found other ways to score. They dominated in the paint, 46-34 advantage in the paint. They dominated the offensive rebounding edge. They had the offense 14 offensive rebounds to the Mavs. 7 offensive rebounds led to 18-4 advantage in second chance points. 27 shots at the rim for Golden State, only 16 shots at the rim for the Mavs. So they just found other ways to get it done and showed their championship pedigree. And defensively, if the Mavs were able to get more stops defensively, they would have been able to win one of these games because Luka is putting in a hell of an effort, giving you 40 points, 11 rebounds. I think in this series, he's averaging around 34 points in the series. But you can't. They're not getting enough stops defensively, and the Warriors' defense is putting a ton of pressure on the Mavs. That 3-2 zone defense they ran in the second half in Game 3, the box and one they threw at the Mavs had no answer for it offensively. I think that's a big part of why the coaching advantage, also we haven't talked enough about, goes to the Warriors. We talked about the roster advantage, the depth advantage. We've talked about, you know, how the Golden State Warriors have probably, you know, if you look at their overall top five players, they have a lot more talent, higher-end talent than the Mavs do. But if you start breaking it down, the coaching advantage is now starting to show, too. I think it's starting to become also a huge disparity in this series.
Yeah, I heard Zay talking about it this morning on B&E. Jason Kidd pretty much has already understood that we don't have enough horses to play with these guys because not enough guys are stepping up to replace some of the things that Luka's not been able to do. I mean, obviously scoring 40 points, he's done a lot. But I think Luka's biggest problem, too, he doesn't let everybody get involved in the game as well. Although Reggie Bullock missing all them shots didn't help. And the fact that they don't knock down a three-point ball the way at a higher rate than what they do. 9 points is right there. You're still in the game. If you knock down a few of those shots, you might win the game. But when they have you up against the wall like they do right now, and there is no tomorrow, and I think it's like 146-0 when a team is up 3 games to none, or at least the Warriors or something like that I saw. It's a monumental task. Can you sit here right now and think that, oh, yeah, they can pull that off? There is no way I would think that they would be able to pull it off. But it is basketball. You still got to play the game. But I just think that the Warriors, they have too many people that can step up if one of the others are off.
Yeah.
I think they have too many complementary pieces.
Yeah, I mean, honestly, I thought they lost the series when they lost Game 2.
Boom.
Because, you know, you're just not a consistent enough team to rally off the amount of wins you're going to have to rally off in a 5-game series. You're going to have to win 4 out of 5. And you're just not going to do it. So I was worried at that point. But in all reality, Jason Kidd had a game plan. That's what they did all season. But when you're relying on not great players to make great things happen for you and hit those threes and you don't have the guys to do it, that's a problem. They're getting open shots. The game plan is technically working, except for the fact that they're not able to hit those threes. And that's where it's just starting to go downhill now. And I think the confidence starts waning and everybody else starts waning, and this is where a young team needs a leader. I'm not sure Jason Kidd has ever been the rah-rah guy, but if you need somebody to be, you know, to go in there and do it, Luka needs to start being that vocal leader and at least be like, hey, man, let's not get swept.
Yeah.
Like, we looked really good. If we win game four, and then we can go to Golden State and win a game there, then at least we showed face. And at least we're trying something. But
that's a good point. No, that's a good point. I agree with you on that.
We got a little bit of breaking news, Rod.
Oh, give it to me.
For the University of Texas football team, we know that Coach Sark has been talking openly about they're going to provide more depth at the wide receiver position. They lost out on Jordan Addison. But breaking news right now, Iowa State wide receiver Tariq Milton exits the transfer portal by committing to the University of Texas.
Oh, wow.
I'd like to thank all the college programs and coaches that have reached out to me during my time in the portal. I've discussed and prayed over my decision with my family, and I'm excited for the next chapter. I am grateful and honored to continue my graduate studies and finish my collegiate football career at the University of Texas. Thank you, Coach Sarkisian, Coach Banks and Coach Marion for believing in my ability, talent, and character. To the Texas Longhorn administration, students, alumni, and fans, hook 'em.
Wow. It was reported that Jordan Addison was the only receiver that they were recruiting at the time, but I guess maybe when Jordan Addison decided he was going to USC, the coaches decided they needed to replenish the depth in that wide receiver room. I like the move. He said, Coach Sark said multiple times, wide receiver and linebacker
are my positions.
Were the positions that they needed to build some depth at, and we know Jordan Addison was a shot in the dark. That was a bit of a long shot, but now you bring in Tariq Milton, who's, you know, he's been productive in the conference. He's dealt with injuries. I think that's the biggest concern about him. But I like the fact he's an explosive receiver. I know he can play the slot, will stay a little bit. But, yeah, I mean, look at his 2019. He had 35 receptions, but averaged 20 yards, over 20 yards per reception. In 2021, only 15 receptions, but over 18 and a half yards per. So he can go downfield, stretch the field for you. I think that's what Texas wants a little bit of, too. So I like it. I like that bringing him in. They need they just need reinforcements and contingency plans at wide receiver, because Jordan Whittington, love that guy, but knock on wood, can't trust him.
Let me knock on that with you.
Yeah, X-Man is fantastic. He's awesome. But Troy O'Meary dealing with an injury still. Yes, you brought in Ajayi Hall, but he's only got, what, 4 career receptions? So, you know, yes, he got a lot of potential, but that's all it is right now is potential. And Isaiah Nayor, fantastic. Love Isaiah Nayor, but he hasn't done it on this level.
Right.
So there's a lot of unproven commodities. The only proven commodity you really have is X-Men.
Boom. So, yeah, because you're still waiting to see what Troy O'Meary is going to be like because of his health.
Yep.
And then the freshman, Casey Kane, you're still trying to figure out what he has. And a couple other position players that you're wondering, hey, can you play this position at this level and be consistent? Mm-hmm. Are we going to be able to find out that you can get open when I need you to be open? Yeah, this is a big get. But he kept saying it. Wide receiver.
He did.
And linebacker. I'm going for it.
He's been consistent about them needing to build the depth at wide receiver and at linebacker. And the reason he throws out wide receiver, I mean, remember last year toward the end of the season, hell, even X-Man is limping and he's hobbled at the end of the year. And he points out that he wears down his wide receivers because of the way he practices. Also, the route combinations for Sark, he hates stop routes, which are just routes where wide receivers have to stop and turn around, look at the quarterback for the football. He prefers what we call movement routes so they can catch the ball on the move. He calls it his run-to-daylight philosophy. So that also wears out the wide receivers. Right? They just run more routes downfield, more mileage on the tires, and he wants them – the reason he covets speed is because he wants those guys to run those routes full speed. He wants to blitz the defense with speed. So if you're a track guy, you know about thoroughbreds, you can only sprint so much until you need rest, until your muscles will be fatigued and wear down and you won't be able to perform at your maximum capacity. So I think that's what he's trying, just bring in guys as many as he can. So even in practice, he doesn't wear down his wide receivers with the routes and with the way that he practices too.
Yep. Yeah, so this is good. Just a good get.
It is a good get. I've watched Tariq Milton, and hell, I remember Longhorns having some trouble defending Tariq Milton. So that's a good thing for the Longhorns. All right, Heat Celtics preview. Just really quickly, because we don't have a ton of time here, and I don't want to get deep into it. But I saw this stat. I just want to make sure I share the stat because it is a freaky stat about the Heat.
Uh-oh.
So the Heat Celtics. So the Heat have a 2-1 lead in this series right now. You got game 4 coming up tonight. The Celtics have been outscored in only 2 quarters over the first 3 games. So the Celtics have basically outscored the Miami Heat in every quarter except for 3. Sorry, 2. 2 quarters. And that is it was game 3 first quarter, and then the third quarter of game 1 is the only 2 quarters. Now, there were 2 ties as well where they tied, but basically the Miami Heat have a 2-1 lead, and they've only won 2 quarters out of the 12 quarters that have been played in this series. Freaky stuff.
That is a strange stat.
It's strange, man.
That is a strange stat.
The Heat defense, though, is what you can serve. They had 19 steals. Franchise playoff record in that 109-103 win. 19 steals. That's a 33 points off of those steals. That is the most by any team in the playoffs since the Bucks in 2015. They had 20 steals.
Who you got tonight?
Man, I picked the Celtics, so I'm going to go with the Celtics.
Yeah, I got the Heat because that was my team to be in the championship. So the problem is, what is Jason Tatum going to do?
Well, the problem is Jimmy Butler and that knee.
Oh, yeah.
Right,
Jason Tatum's got a shoulder. Yeah, Marcus Smart's now got an ankle and a knee and a hip and a back.
So it might work out for everybody.
And Jimmy Butler's got the right knee. They said they think he's going to play, but he's got inflammation.
And Tyler Hero's out because of his groin. He's not playing.
Yeah, this injury, this series is just.
Wow, it's a battle of attrition.
Bad. It's a bloodbath.
Let me give you a stat real quick, though, about P.J. Tucker, our boy P.J. Tucker, against Jason Tatum. That came out that he's guarded. Jason Tatum has been guarded by PJ Tucker for 127 possessions during the regular season and postseason this year. So far, Jason Tatum has scored 15 points on those possessions.
Ooh.
That's lockdown. That's who PJ Tucker is. He's nice frustrating. Stat. If you watched, they ISO'd them at one point during this last game where he was just fighting him the entire time. He wasn't letting Jason Tatum move. Every time he touched his arm, he would kind of yank it down. He was doing everything.
Man.
That's that junkyard dog in PJ Tucker, man. You got to love it.
That's a great stat right there. Yeah. Jason Tatum is not stepping up the way the Celtics need him to. Hopefully that's the case in game four. But, yeah, if maybe it's a battle of attrition now, and the team that's the deepest maybe end up winning this series. All right, we come back. We get into Rod's rant of the day. Jimbo Fisher got into it. We'll play the audio for you with a reporter from KSAT down in San Antonio. We'll play that sound. Also, you could have on the horizon another game-changing element to name, image, and likeness in the great state of Texas. We'll talk about that and more in Rod's Rant of the Day right here on Ball Don't Lie on 104.9 The Horn.
I'm as mad as hell, and I'm not going to take this anymore!
Find out what happens when people stop being polite and start getting real.
You ain't keeping it real.
My God! Okay, it's happening. Everybody stay calm.
No, you've done it now. It's time for Rod's Rant of the Day.
Hold on to your butts.
All right, welcome back to Rod's Rant of the Day here on Ball Don't Lie. For those who haven't heard, the big news that just broke on the 40 Acres is that Tariq Milton, the wide receiver from Iowa State, is transferring to the University of Texas. He is going to become a member of the Longhorns wide receiving room. So Steve Sarkisian making good on his promise to add some depth to the wide receiver room. So that's the big news there. Let's get to the news that was big news all over the weekend and was the talk of the town after Nick Saban made his comments, pointing the finger at A&M and Deion Sanders at Jackson State and the Miami booster, who also was kind of thrown in the fire as well there. And then there was a retort, a response by Jimbo Fisher, which we played for you, and then an apology by Nick Saban, which we also played for you. So, continuing on the trend of just playing you the audio of the drama going down between the Real Housewives of the SEC. Here is Jimbo Fisher. He was at a speaking event in San Antonio, and he sat down with a reporter from KSAT. And this is a two-part interview, but the reporter does reveal at the end of the interview that this is the second part to a two-part interview. So they're going to play the first part later this week. Don't know why they're playing the second part first. Maybe because the second part is the meat of it, and that's why I'm playing it for you. Because it is, like I said, I defended Jimbo Fisher's response to Nick Saban. I think in a court of public opinion, he won that battle. This is something a little different. And even though he looked emotional in the response to Nick Saban, and that's a friend of his, so I understand why he would feel emotional that he violated the trust. This seems like he's close to being a little unhinged, and you know he is. Because he's trying to be like somebody's trying to de-escalate him from off camera. There's a woman and a man at times that they say, hey, they're yelling something to him. He goes, I got this. Leave me alone. So he's in a zone. And they're trying to de-escalate it, and he's escalating it.
Yeah.
Not saying that he wasn't agitated or poked. It is a member of the media. That's what they do or we do or whatever. So here is the whole thing. It's about 2.5 minutes, but like I said, I couldn't find a place to break it up. So here is Jimbo Fisher sitting down with KSAT and them asking him about, and this is Greg Simmons, I believe is a reporter, asking him about his verbal bouts that he's having right now with Nick Saban.
Hey, rules are always a change. That had nothing to do with it. And name, image, and likeness, I keep saying this about recruiting.
And I just researched this. Of the 11 guys we have in placing that came early, one guy has an NIL deal.
Really?
Yes.
Just one?
Just one. So all these stories you're hearing are complete lies.
Well, now, because what happened over the last 48 hours?
Nothing. It never happened before. Because it was written on social media, and it started with the Bro Bible sliced bread deal.
Right.
So everybody believed it. Nick, all the people obviously believed it. I went and checked with our compliance people, because we have nothing to do with it. One guy.
Of the 11?
Yes.
Of the early enrollees.
Gotcha. So that said, what is all this dust up about then?
Great point.
I've just got to ask you, were you shocked that this came up? Because you just told me you only had one.
I said that about a while ago. It's like, that's why I made the original one back in February when they said we had $35 million in the thing. That's all false. It was written on social media so everybody believes it. And you got news channels believing it. Hey, big people believing it. And you believed it.
Well, and Nick Saban believed it, obviously.
Well, he's not news. You're news. You're media. You guys not research?
But
I'm asking you, did you do your research?
No.
See, you can't answer. So you just assumed. And that's the way this world goes now. As soon as it's written on social media and someone says it, you believe it. So where does that put you as guys as reporters?
Where does that put coaches like Nick Saban, who know better, if that's the case?
Where does that put reporters at?
So you're defending Nick Saban?
No, I'm just criticizing. I'm asking you guys to put it out in the media. Just hold on. I ain't getting into this.
No. I understand, but I just wanted. Is this change?
It's because social media and media put it out. I got it.
Mm-hmm.
You believed it. You just asked me.
Sure. Does that change anything?
What's it change? Nothing's just changed in the beginning.
Truth.
What's the truth? Nobody wants the truth. You want a story and a click and a hit. Think. What's the next question? See, I threw you off your game right now.
Well,
you're off your game. You're out of questions.
Definitely not out of questions.
Yeah.
So how does that change the...
Doesn't change anything. Because I know the truth, and I've always known the truth. That's why.
Then why would he make that accusation?
I have to ask him.
Again.
Just let me handle it.
Why would he make that accusation, though? If it's...
Why did you make that accusation?
I didn't make any accusations.
I don't know. You have to ask him.
Has he apologized to you at all?
No, we haven't talked.
Would you accept his public apology?
I said we're not talking.
But he publicly apologized. Do you accept that?
I didn't read it. I don't read social media.
We said it on SiriusXM, but whatever.
I don't listen to radio. I don't listen to that.
Gotcha. Do you think this is of what happened over the last 48 hours? Do you think this is somewhat of a snapshot of a bigger picture problem?
I have no idea.
When it comes to the NIL?
I have no idea. NIL wasn't a problem.
Why are the Aggies so good at this? In other words...
We're not.
Oh, really? You don't think you guys are more organized and more...
No.
...than any other university?
Mm-mm.
You don't think that would not have been somewhat of a motivation of why he did what he did?
I don't know. You have to ask him.
Gotcha. Is there anything you'd like to add to the last 48 hours that have happened here?
Yeah, there was one deal.
There's one deal. That was it. And those are all...
And I checked on that from our compliance. That's where it goes.
And that's all 11 of the early signees.
Mm-hmm.
Gotcha.
All right, so you can tell the person off camera, the media relations person that he's talking to, that kind of yelling back and forth, they were very specific to point out, or when he points out that, hey, our recruiting class of the early enrollees, only one of them has a name, image, and likeness deal, and the guy off camera reiterates, of the early enrollees, just so you know. All right, early enrollees, only one of them has a name, image, and likeness deal already in place. So I think he messed up by giving the number out there. He shouldn't have given details. Don't give details.
That's when people know that you're lying.
Well, I'm not saying no, you're lying, but they can catch you in a lie now.
That's my point.
That so they can catch you in a lie. Like, no details. Don't give them details. Make them go find the details on their own.
There's so much that is in that just kind of just drives me nuts, because you sit there and he said, I had to go do the research to find this out. What do you mean? You're the head coach at Texas A&M. You are supposed to know everything that is going on.
Actually, no, he's not. because it's compliance, and it's compliance in the collective. So actually the coach is not supposed to know. It's the whole point of this. He's not supposed to be an integral part of it. He's supposed to be out of that loop. That loop is a closed loop between compliance, the student athletes, the collectives. He's not. The whole point is he's not supposed to be pitching it as a rated recruit.
I know he's not supposed to be.
Until you
be
get on campus, that's when you get it.
I know in theory, Rod. I know, you are 100%
saying, like,
correct.
So I'm saying, like, that's why, you know, I mean, I'm just putting it out there.
I know. In theory, you are 100% correct. But on the campus, we all know that the biggest person at the university is the head football coach, especially in a university like that. He knows everything that goes on that university campus. He should anyway, because if anything goes down, it's coming back to Jimbo Fisher. We don't go and talk to the compliance people. We're not supposed to talk to all these other people. We're going to talk to the head coach, as this person went and asked. And he said he had to go do the research. Okay, fine. So what is the truth? He said that only one person. He had to go
of the early enrollees.
Early enrollees.
Yes. Because you can't even have one if you're not a student athlete on campus.
So as soon as these kids get on campus and the light switches on, all of a sudden they're in this collective and they're making all this money.
When the paperwork is in, yeah.
When all the paperwork is in. So now what happens with the compliance check? So was that the lady that was trying to tell him quit talking? Was that the compliance?
I don't know. I think that was more media relations.
Is she trying to say, hey, man, quit talking about this because you're giving us a rope that we may not be able to handle?
No. The early on, that was a guy saying, hey, only of the early enrollees. The woman is stepping in to, I think, de-escalate the conversation between he and the reporter. They're just trying to hear him like, hey, let's ease it back.
Oh, okay.
You're getting way too wild.
I don't think
it had anything to do with, like, this fact. The fact they were giving out, they were all in support of, this is the fact, and we're giving this fact out. Trust me, that fact probably went through, you know, the AD and the athletic department. They wanted that out there. They want that information
that number
out there. Yeah, of the early enrollees, only one of them has a name, image, and likeness deal. All right, this is why this whole name, image, and likeness conversation is about to change, especially here in the great state of Texas. And we all agree, in terms of name, image, and likeness weaponization, the Aggies are doing it better than anybody else in the country, and the Longhorns want to be the name, image, and likeness capital of college sports. All right, so you got a lot of money flowing. And that's going to affect every level of this name, image, and likeness conversation. Now, we're just talking about the college level, but there is a high school level to this, right? And we know that Quinn Ewers, who's on the campus right now, he left Texas.
Yep.
You're the number one recruit in that class, left school early, left Texas high school early to go take advantage of name, image, and likeness revenue elsewhere. And the state of Texas sees this as commodities leaving the market. That's money. Quinn Ewers leaving the state of Texas, leaving high school early to go to another market to go play represents money leaving your state.
Yep.
And nobody produces quarterbacks better than the state of Texas. So what if that starts a trend of quarterbacks wanting to make money and decide, hell, man, I'm going to another state to go make the rest of my money. No. So that leads us to this.
United Interscholastic League is preparing the league for the possibility that high school athletes may be able to take endorsement deals. This could be taken up in a matter of months. So let's bring in sports director Greg Bailey with more. Hey, Greg.
How about this? We have talked a lot about college athletes making big money from endorsements. Now that's coming to high school athletics. Coaches in Texas now scrambling to get ready. This morning, the executive director of the Texas High School Coaches Association, Joe Martin, told us he expects legislation to make its way to debate in our state house as soon as January. High school athletes in a handful of states like Louisiana, they can already make money with their name, image, and likeness. Many coaches in our area and across the state of Texas bracing for what they think is inevitable. The implications and the impact on high school sports would be enormous. Imagine the star running back at a place like, say, Dallas High School making $10,000 to endorse a local auto dealership.
There you go. That comes from ABC 13 in H-Town. The lawmakers are bringing it up because, it represents commerce leaving the state. They don't want that to happen, especially with how much money now, the windfall of revenue now in names like this. Anytime something, an activity at one time was considered illegal or unlawful, All right. And people were doing it in a black market kind of it basically were supplementing with black market services or black market products. Soon as that is legalized, whether it be legalized marijuana or the prohibition of alcohol back in the day, the economic windfall and the revenue that follows is always epic, and it is supersized.
Yeah.
And the same thing with name, image, and likeness revenue. You got all this revenue now coming, and the state just wants to make sure that it gets its piece, right? And that's part of why you may now have high school athletes able to capitalize on name, image, likeness, because they can't afford for a trend to start of all these really good, the two best quarterback factories in the country are here in this state, and they're here in this city, Westlake and Lake Travis. And you're going to have to start a trend of great quarterbacks being produced in this state who decide to leave their senior year. Follow Quinn Ewers' example and go, I got to go get this money in Louisiana or Arizona or wherever the hell else they decide that high school athletes can maximize and make revenue off name, image, and likeness. They just follow in the lead before they start losing great athletes, and they don't want to do that.
Yeah,
you may not like it, but that's just the reality of it.
The question it will be, how early in your high school career can you start making this type of money? Is this something that happens as a freshman, sophomore, junior, or does it have to be your senior year? How do you quantify where the money is going to be made and how soon it could be made? Because next it will be in middle school. We hear about all these phenoms in middle school that are supposed to be the next great basketball player, football player, baseball player, track, whatever. So where's the regulation on how early you can start making this type of money?
Contact your local politician.
Yeah.
Contact your local congressman or congresswoman or whatever, because they're the ones who are going to decide that.
Yeah,
we're talking about this is state's law. These are, you know what I mean? That's yeah. So they're
can
the
we
ones
fix
who are
some
decide.
Other stuff before we start dealing with these high school kids and their money? Can we fix some other things if we're going to be dealing with our politicians with this?
Yeah,
there's a lot to get into, but I'm just curious to how it's all going to play out, because I personally have a young child that is going to be a high school athlete here soon.
Very true.
And how is that going to play in our household as far as people wanting to be a part of what he's trying to do? I don't know. I'm not saying he's that guy yet, but if they're going to put it out there and they're going to have that type of ability, where does it start and where does it stop?
All right. No, interesting conversation. All right, we'll come back. We got to get into some Astros Rangers discussion on the other side, right here on Ball Don't Lie, 104.9 Horn. All right, welcome back to Ball Don't Lie, right here on 104.9 The Horn. It is a Blue Monday, shorter segment here, getting you ready for the 6 o'clock. 6 o'clock, we'll get into the Cowboys. In the first segment, Bill Barnwell making a suggestion for the Cowboys on offense. One I think my man Harge has probably made as well. Pro Football Focus ranking the Cowboys edge rushers. I think they are actually very complimentary of the Cowboys edge rushers. So we'll talk about that coming up in the 6 o'clock. Austin FC battle to a draw with Orlando. We'll get into that at 6:30 in the 6 o'clock. Rangers, though, fall 5-2 to the Astros. Astros in their series finale. Astros won 3 out of those 4 games versus the Rangers. Verlander was on the mound on Saturday and basically pitched a beast mode performance. 6 scoreless innings. He had 8 Ks, hard 0 walks, 6 hits allowed. He had 67 strikes out of his 95 pitches. Third straight scoreless outing. Now, Justin Verlander is first in Major League Baseball in wins, in ERA 1.22, in a whip 0.72, and also in opposing batting average 161.
Yeah.
At 39, was he 39 years old?
I think he's right there with
somewhere around there, yeah.
39, 30, coming off a major injury.
Yeah,
that's crazy, yeah. Man.
Again, I always take it back to learning how to pitch. I think that's what Verlander has done during his time. You know, his fastball isn't what it used to be, but he's been able to work the count, moving the ball in and out, up and down, different breaking balls, changing speeds. He's done a great job with that. And against the Rangers, that final score was 2-1. Then you talk about Ryan Pressly coming back. Pressly had the save on Saturday, and he had the save on Sunday. So him being able to come back and pitch back-to-back nights is a huge get for the Houston Astros. Rangers have been playing good baseball, though. I mean, they've been in pretty much every single game. I know they don't have the record that they wanted. They started off better than what they were. I mean, started off bad, but then they started winning a bunch of games, making some way. They're still not where they need to be, but they're doing some positive things there in Arlington.
Yeah, but I mean, yeah, Justin Verlander was just great. But Jose Urquidy, Urquidy had 10 Ks on Sunday. That was tied a career high for him. And he now, I think, if you just look at his ERA at Minute Maid, I think it's around 2.95. So pitching well there. But Justin Verlander, man, he's just been a freak. Here are the batting averages against his some of his favorite pitches. Against his four-seam fastball, opposing batters are hitting 146. Against his slider, they're hitting 206. Against his curveball, they're hitting 91. And against his changeup, zero.
Yeah.
They can't hit his changeup.
That's what I'm saying. He's learned how to mix up his pitches and being effective with all of them.
Yeah.
The biggest part of it, too, is the spark plug that Jose Altuve is. I mean, him being able to hit home runs, leading
fifth
off the
home
game.
Run, right?
The first pitch of the game, hitting it out of the park, and then getting a double. But Altuve, Alvarez, Brantley, Bregman, Pena, and Gurriel have all contributed, and that's who we expected. Those are the usual suspects for us, and they're all creeping their average up each step of the way. You know, Altuve started off slow. Now he's up to 283. Michael Brantley, professional hitter, he's at 290. You're looking at Bregman. Bregman's trying to get his stuff together. He's creeping up to 230 right now. Alvarez, 256. Tucker, 245, but he's getting a lot of hits. And my man Pena is continuing to do his thing as shortstop. Patrick sent us how his war against replacement, how effective he is. He's the number one shortstop in the major leagues right now.
That's crazy.
And Pena's hitting 286. So just those little pieces and continually building within that organization, because a lot of these guys are coming up through the organization. Mm-hmm. They're not a lot of guys coming from the outside. Remember, they wanted to trade Kyle Tucker at one point. A lot of teams were looking at him, but they would not trade him, and it's starting to pay off for them. And Yordan Alvarez is just a big donkey. Out there swinging at things.
Yeah, and we'll say Christian Javier rebounded. They lost the game, but he only gave up one run in six innings.
Yeah.
Nine strikeouts in that. So Christian Javier came back in after a really bad outing, came back and pitched a lot better.
Yeah, that starting pitching is starting to look pretty good. And like you said, now they got Presley back in that closer role for the Astros, too.
Yep.
All right, we'll come back. We'll get into the 6 o'clock. We'll talk Cowboys. I got to ask my man Harch a question. I think it's a question a lot of Cowboys fans have asked themselves after the last couple of years. We'll get into that. Austin FC on the other side as well. All of that and more right here on Ball Don't Lie on 104.9 The Horn.